Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. A preliminary ruling is in the lawsuit over an Alpine high school. Learn the decision on today's show. We'll also have the latest on the presidential primary trail, plus news about a controversial transportation ballot initiative approved by Sandag. On Destination East County, hear about fun festivals and events from the Ramona Rodeo to the Coyote Music Festival and a Wild in the Country celebration at Lions, Tigers, and Bears coming up soon. Then on the second half of our show, our newsmaker interviews today are with advocates for the homeless, Dolores Diaz and Michael McConnell. They'll be talking about results from their point-in-time count of the homeless countywide and why one East County community failed to meet federal requirements, meaning hundreds of homeless people in one local shelter couldn't be counted at all. So stay tuned for these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
The San Diego Association of Governments, or SANDAG Board, has voted to approve a ballot measure that would fund transit, freeway, and infrastructure improvements to voters in November. Next up, supervisors must decide whether to let voters have the final say. If approved, the $18.2 million plan would raise county sales tax a half cent to fund freeway projects, road repairs, public transit, open space management, and complying with state water quality mandates. But the proposed initiative is on a collision course with a coalition of opponents who are providing the political maxim that politics makes strange bedfellows. Supporters say the measure would raise billions for needed infrastructure improvements and transit, adding more frequent bus and trolley service as well as freeway improvements and more. KPBS has reported that Councilman Todd Gloria calls the action meaningful, adding, quote, "I think that will transform lives and make our region's quality of life much better," unquote. But some prominent environmental groups argue that the measure doesn't go far enough to invest in mass transit, putting too much short-term emphasis on more freeways that could induce sprawl in outlying rural, forest, and suburban areas instead of encouraging growth in the urban core. Nicole Kopretz, executive director of the Climate Action Campaign in San Diego, says, quote, "Sprawl development isn't going to work anymore," the Union Tribune reports. Some Republican leaders have warned that Republican officials on the SANDAG board would violate their no new taxes pledges if they vote for the measure, even to give voters the final word by putting it on the ballot. Brian Brady, a Republican Central Committee member, posted on San Diego Rostra, quote, "Republicans on SANDAG who voted to put this on the ballot should expect a conservative challenger this November. I promise you that I will communicate to the voters that the incumbent voted to raise their taxes," unquote. Thus, the transportation initiative, even if approved by supervisors, seems fated to have a bumpy ride ahead. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
This is Miriam Raftery with some major new developments in the presidential primary race. Texas Senator Ted Cruz has announced that he is pulling out of the Republican presidential race. Cruz made the announcement after losing the Indiana primary. One day later, Ohio Governor John Kasich announced that he, too, is ending his campaign, all but assuring that Donald Trump will win the Republican nomination. Cruz said, "From the beginning, I've said I would continue on as long as there was a viable path to victory. Tonight, I'm sorry to say, it appears that path has been foreclosed." The surprise announcement came just days after Cruz announced that Carly Fiorina would be his running mate if he won the nomination and after he pledged to fight on until the convention. Although Cruz was mathematically eliminated after last week's primary results from winning the nomination on the first ballot at the Republican convention, he had banked hopes on blocking Trump from receiving enough votes to do so either. On a second ballot, delegates would have been free to switch allegiances and support another candidate. On Tuesday, even as voting was underway in Indiana, Cruz blasted Trump as a serial philanderer, a pathological liar, and a narcissist. But despite the Cruz campaign pulling out all the stops, Trump won Indiana with 53% of the vote, taking all 51 of the state's delegates. Polls showed Trump with a strong lead in California also, the largest state yet to vote. Governor Kasich, meanwhile, said he is suspending his campaign with a deeper faith that the Lord will show me the way forward to fulfill the purpose of my life. Kasich had won only one state, his home state of Ohio. The departure of Kasich and Cruz from the race clears the way for Donald Trump to shift his focus toward defeating Hillary Clinton, the leading contender to win the Democratic nomination. Now, on the Democratic side of the primary, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders scored a win in the Indiana presidential primary, taking over 52% of the vote in an upset win over Hillary Clinton. Former Secretary of State Clinton took nearly 48% of the vote. Sanders picked up 43 delegates at Clinton 37. Clinton now has 1,682 delegates won through voting, while Sanders has 1,361. That's a gap of only about 321 delegates. However, when the superdelegates are added in, Clinton has a more commanding lead of over 2,200 versus 1,400 for Sanders. A total of 2,382 delegates are needed to win. Senator Sanders is pinning his hopes on big wins in liberal bastions such as California and Oregon, which have yet to vote, then coaxing a substantial number of superdelegates to change their support for the good of the party in November. Now, that's clearly an uphill battle, but a new Rasmussen poll adds ammunition to Sanders' argument, showing Clinton losing to Trump if the general election were held today. Various older polls showed Clinton beating Trump, but only by a narrow margin, and found Sanders beating Trump by much larger margins, in some cases double digits. Sanders stated, "I think that as more and more delegates to the Democratic Convention take a hard look at which candidate is generating the kind of enthusiasm, excitement, and voter turnout to make sure that someone like Donald Trump does not become president, I think you're going to see more and more delegates concluding that that candidate is Bernie Sanders." He added that he believes he's speaking to the issues most Americans care about, including the wealth gap, helping the struggling middle class and poor, creating jobs through building infrastructure, and making college affordable. Clinton did not issue a statement on the Indiana primary results, but she is focusing her efforts next on primaries in West Virginia and Kentucky. Appalachian coal mining states, traditionally carried by Republicans, and where talk of green energy means loss of jobs for those working in the coal industry. Clinton promised to implement a Marshall-style plan to retrain coal workers in other fields and to put her husband, former President Bill Clinton, in charge of coming up with ideas to increase manufacturing in the region. A preliminary ruling is in the case over the Alpine High School, and it's a heartbreaker for the people of Alpine. Superior Court Judge Joel Pressman proposes setting aside a preliminary injunction against the Grossmont District. If his ruling stands, it will allow Grossmont to keep $42 million that had been set aside for an Alpine High School that the district never built. The money is a portion of bond measure funds approved by voters, in part, for the long-promised school. The suit was filed by the Alpine Union School District and by the Alpine Taxpayers for Bond Accountability. Those groups now have 15 days to file an appeal. The Union Tribune reports that attorney Craig Sherman, representing the taxpayers' organization, states, "We welcome the opportunity and the chance for this to come out as intended by the voters who enacted Prop U. The actions and conduct of Grossmont indicates it just does not care about the rather clear voter mandate for Alpine." Pressman's 40-page preliminary ruling follows a 9-day trial that included extensive testimony. The plaintiffs contend the district spent money on items not in the bond and on projects that were lesser priority than the new high school, such as an Olympic swimming pool and a theater. Alpine students have died in the past, commuting to schools up to 37 miles round-trip distance from their homes on roads that can be icy during the winter weather. So the need for a high school in their community is crucial to voters and parents there. The district has claimed that enrollment triggers required by the bonds were not met, although plaintiffs dispute that contention since the 23,245 student number was met not once, but three times through the years. Judge Pressman agreed on that, but said that only the start of construction counts for purposes of meeting the enrollment trigger. The district actually bought land for the project, but never started construction of the school and later withdrew its architectural design application from the state. Pressman's decision parses the language in Prop U, which states that funds may be spent on building an Alpine High School, which he interpreted to mean the project was authorized but not required. Even though advertising for the bonds to parents in the district touted building the high school as a reason to vote for the bond. Grossmont Superintendent Ralph Swenson issued a statement that reads in part, "This is a win for the students, teachers, and the taxpayers of East County, as our governing board can now resume their efforts to see that the taxpayers' dollars are put back to work for the benefits of our schools and the students that we serve. All students at all schools in our district should have classrooms and facilities that meet the current educational needs of those students and that ensure their safety." But board member Priscilla Schreiber, who has dissented from the board majority and been a consistent voice supporting the Alpine School and opposing funding the lawsuit to oppose it, had this to say. Grossmont wins on all counts. Are you kidding me? A unification petition is pending before the state that would allow Alpine to leave the Grossmont district entirely and become part of the Alpine Union School District, which currently serves only elementary and middle school children. The County Board of Education has recommended approval of that unification petition, which would allow the Alpine district to expand to serve high school students and to build a high school. But even if unification is approved now by the state and ultimately voters, it will be a hollow victory if Judge Pressman's ruling stands and is not overturned on appeal. The right to build a high school without the $42 million that voters approved to do so would still leave Alpine students forced to commute long distances to school for the foreseeable future. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes the opening of dinner and a concert season in El Cajon, the Campo Roundup, Coyote Music Festival, A Taste of Julian, Rihanna in Concert, and a Hukumba Community Yard Sale, complete with Chinese Castle Tour and rides in a flying saucer.
Plus, we'll have previews of coming attractions, including the Ramona Rodeo and Parade, Wild in the Country at Lions, Tigers, and Bears, a Laurel and Hardy Wacky Western Night in Spring Valley, one-man musical show in Mission Trails Regional Park, and El Cajon's America on Main Street celebration.
So stay tuned for all these events and more. Dinner and a concert opening night at the Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon kicks off Friday, May 6th, with Clay Colton playing country rock. You can enjoy music and dancing every Friday night from 6 to 8 p.m. from May 6th through October 7th. Bring a picnic or have dinner at one of the many restaurants in downtown El Cajon. For a complete lineup of concerts, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
Relive the Wild West at the 10th Annual Campo Roundup on Saturday, May 7th at the Camp Lockett Event and Equestrian Facility in Campo. Gates open at 7 a.m. with opening ceremonies at 9:30 a.m. Witness how cowboys ride, rope, and brand cattle. Activities also include a Gymkhana competition, Western skits and gunfighting reenactments of the famed Campo Shootout, mutton busting, kids games, hay rides, a Miss Roundup competition, and a raffle. Period costumes are welcome. For more information, you can visit campocleef.org/roundup.
The Coyote Music Festival returns to Queen Mecca College on Saturday, May 7th, starting at 12 noon on the Grand Lawn. Now in its eighth year, the entirely student-run festival provides the community with an afternoon of live outdoor music. The festival also culminates a semester's worth of work for students studying music, technology, recording, and business. For details on this event, visit quimaca.edu.
Quirky and fun. Hukumba Hot Springs Community-Wide Yard Sale takes place on Saturday, May 7th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Old Highway 80 and the Railroad Station. Besides shopping for yard sale finds and perusing handmade arts and craft items, you can also take a ride in a flying saucer for a unique photo opportunity or tour the Chinese castle where rumors swirl about its infamous past. Did a murder once occur here? Is there a smuggler's tunnel to Mexico? You can find out facts versus fiction on the tour on May 7th.
Rihanna is one of the best-selling artists of all time, and she'll be performing live in concert at the Viejas Arena in San Diego State University on May 9th. Rihanna is the youngest solo artist to earn 14 number one singles on the Billboard Hot 100. She's won 8 Grammy Awards, 8 American Music Awards, 23 Billboard Music Awards, and received the inaugural Icon Award at the American Music Awards in 2013. For tickets and details, you can visit the Viejas Arena website.
The 8th Annual Taste of Julian, a rural dining adventure, will be held on May 9th from 1 until 5 p.m. This self-guided culinary tour includes one-of-a-kind restaurants, wineries, and breweries. For more information, you can visit julianca.com.
Now for a preview of coming attractions. Young Actors Theater in Spring Valley continues its presentation of Once Upon a Mattress that runs now through May 14th. This musical production is based on the Hans Christian Andersen tale, The Princess and the Pea. For tickets and details, visit yatsandiego.org.
You're invited to a party to benefit the Alpine Community Center on Friday, May 13th. This event includes a ribeye steak dinner, art show, live jazz, blues, and swing music by Chet and the Committee. For tickets, you can RSVP to 619-445-7330.
Lions, Tigers, and Bears invites you to Wild in the Country, a benefit event to support the exotic animal rescue facility in Alpine. The event will take place on May 14th and will feature a catered dinner, an optional Feed a Wild One experience, visits with big cats and bears, plus a silent auction with prizes including an African safari. For more information or tickets, you can visit lionstigersandbears.org.
The San Diego Laurel and Hardy Group, Saps at Sea, will present Laurel and Hardy Wacky Western Night on Saturday, May 14th at Trinity Church in Spring Valley. The program includes such cinematic gems as A Car-Punching Cartoon, West of Hot Dog, Horse Collars, and Way Out West. For more information, you can visit sapsatsea.com.
The Ramona Rodeo takes place May 19th to the 22nd, along with other activities including a parade down Main Street on the 21st and dancing to a country band, Patrick Howard Trampas, on the 20th and 21st after the rodeo. There's also a free slack rodeo performance on the 19th, as well as a kids' day on the 22nd featuring the youngest cowboys and cowgirls riding sheep in the mutton bustin' competition. Adult rodeo events include bull riding, bareback riding, barrel racing, a tie-down competition, steer wrestling, and more. Winners may advance to the Professional Rodeo Cowboys Association National Rodeo Championship. For tickets and details, you can visit RamonaRodeo.net.
The City of El Cajon invites you to bring the family to its fun patriotic event, America on Main Street. This year's event has the theme, The Beach Comes East, and will be held on Saturday, May 21st from 12 noon to 8 p.m., coinciding with the National Armed Forces Day. The festivities include three stages with live entertainment, a Ferris wheel, a chili cook-off featuring police versus firemen, and a petting zoo. For details, you can visit AmericaOnMainStreet.org.
The Mission Trails Regional Park Foundation welcomes acclaimed musician Gregory Page performing his one-man show on Sunday, May 29th, 3 to 4 p.m. at the Mission Trails Regional Parks Visitor Center. You're invited to rewind to a bygone era with an afternoon of endearing, enchanting, and entertaining music by the one and only Mr. Gregory Page. Gregory Page is a London-born crooner and troubadour. The Gregory Page Songbook has been featured in film, on television, the BBC, and the NPR's Prairie Home Companion. For more information, you can visit mtrp.org.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week for more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway Studio in East County. Today, my very special guests are Dolores Diaz, the Executive Director of the Regional Task Force on the Homeless, and Michael McConnell, who is a longtime San Diego business owner, an advocate for solving homelessness, and he runs the Homelessness News Advocacy Site. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Our pleasure.
Thanks for having me here.
They're here today to talk about the latest results from the point-in-time count of the homeless in our region, known as We All Count. So, can you start by telling us where San Diego ranks nationally right now in terms of homelessness countywide?
Nationally, San Diego ranks fourth in homelessness and 23rd in federal homeless funding.
Wow. So how important is the accuracy, and does that affect whether we get more federal dollars?
Well, the accuracy is important, and how it affects whether we get federal dollars is we have to report out what the results are, whether we did the count, how we did it in the regional federal homeless funding application to HUD. It is a competitive process, and we do have to report that we conducted a count. At the federal level, communities are required to do counts annually of the sheltered. So HUD requires communities to count the sheltered every year and to count those that are on the street every 2 years. San Diego, however, has chosen to do that count every year.
Okay. What were the results of this year's count that I understand you've just completed? How many San Diegans countywide are homeless according to the count?
Well, we have to remember that the point in time count is just a snapshot. It's just a quick look within a 3 hour span. It's conducted the last 10 days of January between 4 and 7 a.m. And this year we counted 8,692 persons the morning of January 29th.
That's an awfully high number. Now, how does that compare with last year? And also, how did the rate of sheltered versus unsheltered homeless change in the last year here locally?
That's a very good question. We had a small regional decrease of less than 1% region-wide, but the sheltered amount decreased by 18%, and the unsheltered had an increase of approximately 19%.
So we had a 19% increase in the unsheltered homeless. That's a very large number. Do you have any theories on why that number went up so much?
Well, it's quite a charge to count a region of over 4,000 square miles. You know, our challenge is to count 627 census tracts. That's how many census tracts are in San Diego County. And thank you to 1,676. That's a lot of volunteers.
Wow.
That came out the morning of the count, and we counted 585 out of 627 census tracts. So that's a lot of eyes out there just enumerating the unsheltered.
Okay, and we'll get to talking a little bit later about some of the things that can be done to help the unsheltered people, which is obviously a very big question raised by this. But that's obviously an area where things got worse. But are there some areas that have improved, such as getting more veterans off the street, for instance?
Although the count overall showed that we had a reduction in homelessness of a little under 1%, we showed a decrease in veteran homelessness of 16.2% in the region.
Very good. Do you have any statistics or guidelines that you can give us on just who all of these homeless people are, you know, about how many of them are veterans or families with children, women? Do a lot of them have mental illness or disabilities, for example, or other medical issues?
Quick things that we learned from the 2016 count. We learned that approximately 72% of those that are unsheltered on the street are men, and almost 28% of those that are on the street are women. A little under 1% said that they were transgender, and a little over 12% were veterans. And I'm talking specifically about those that were unsheltered that we counted.
Wow.
About 22% of the unsheltered were chronically homeless based on a recent HUD definition change. About 14% had mental health issues, and about 8% had substance abuse. But we have to remember that these statistics are all self-report.
So we interviewed approximately 24% of those that we counted that were unsheltered, mm-hmm. and we were able to pull some information. And one of the biggest things that we learned is a 70% of those that were unsheltered that we talked to said that they became homeless in San Diego.
So it's really a myth, these people that say, if we offer more services, we're going to be a magnet for homeless people from all over the country, when 70% of them became homeless right here. Maybe not a myth, but it's an exaggeration.
That is a theory, but a lot of people have theories that aren't backed up with data. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you that based on the data that we collected, 70% said they became homeless in San Diego.
Let's talk specifically now about not just the county overall, but the specific cities and regions in the county, starting with the city of San Diego. How did its numbers look in this year's count?
When we look at San Diego City proper, there was a reduction of homelessness in San Diego City by 8%. But that said, we saw a pretty significant increase, a little over 20% of increase in the numbers downtown San Diego. So overall, city of San Diego proper, reduction of 8%, but an increase of 20.8% of the unsheltered in San Diego City proper.
We're starting to see a trend then in the unsheltered going up. What about our cities here in East County, La Mesa, Lemon Grove, El Cajon, and Santee?
As I mentioned, we had quite a few counters. We were able to count 12 homeless persons in the city of Lemon Grove, 31 in La Mesa. In El Cajon, we were able to count 321. But I will tell you that I believe that that is an undercount for the city of El Cajon.
And we're going to talk about that in a moment. But what about the city of Santee?
The city of Santee, we were able to count 63 homeless persons in the city of Santee.
Okay. And are any of those significant increases over last year?
I don't have a comparison, but we will have a comprehensive report published prior to the end of June of this year.
Okay.
That will give a specific city profile if we collected a good statistical sampling in that city.
Yeah. Now, I would like to hear why you had difficulty counting the people in the shelters in El Cajon. They obviously have a big homeless problem out there, 300 and something that you were able to count. But why were you not able to have that access? What was the problem?
Well, HUD gives us very specific instructions as to how we are to count and report the sheltered in particular. And we collect data in what we call the Homeless Management Information System, HMIS. It is our software that we collect data with. And in order to be able to count someone as sheltered, we need to know where the bed is, and we need to have the matching data for who is in that bed, you know, demographic information and a little more about who is actually in the bed. And in El Cajon, there is a project that is not federally funded through the continuum of care.
That's the East County Transitional Living Center?
That has 319 beds that we know of that told us, and we know that these beds exist. However, unfortunately, we could not count those because we could not, they do not collect the client level data that we need to be able to say that they were counted as sheltered.
Are you going to be talking to the city? They do give this organization money. Perhaps the city could ask them or could require them to include that data?
Yes, we have had informal conversations with the city, and I'm sure that the continuum is going to talk to them a bit further, because we do need full cooperation by all programs, not just those that are funded by HUD, but by those that are not, so that we can report the numbers accurately to HUD that actually rolls up into a report to Congress on homelessness. It's an annual homeless assessment report that talks about how many homeless persons are in the nation. So in order to participate in that, we have to have good data.
Very important. And we at East County Magazine will certainly follow up on that one. We'll be asking the city of El Cajon about that and the East County Transitional Living Center as well. Michael, we have seen a trend in San Diego and some other areas toward what really can only be characterized as a punitive handling of the homeless in some places, such as the homeless sweeps that have been conducted by San Diego police and the sheriff where the homeless belongings are seized. Some might argue there's reason for the sweeps, but certainly it's a very difficult thing for the homeless people caught up in that. And now there's been a big controversy about the city of San Diego putting sharp rocks up where the homeless have been sleeping under an overpass, you know, the only place they could get shelter from the rain, really, when there's not enough sheltered areas for them to sleep. And now I understand these sharp rocks are turning up on medians in La Mesa as well, maybe other places. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, we're seeing a move across the country toward criminalization efforts of people experiencing homelessness. And it's done out of frustration. A lot of times this is driven by business groups and resident groups because the cities or the counties are not taking proactive stances on actually resolving, actually solving homelessness for the people actually out on our streets. And so the measures that result from this frustration tend to be giving out tickets for encroachment. San Diego Police Department was out this morning giving out tickets for encroachment on 17th Street. And this is a way of making people feel like you can't be there. There's not a place for them to be, but they can't be there. So it's dispersing people out of the downtown area. And one of the problems is that it's going to pit communities against community. And so what we're already seeing is in the community of Sherman Heights, which is adjacent to the East Village in downtown San Diego, where the largest concentration of unsheltered people experiencing homelessness is, the resident groups in Sherman Heights are getting very frustrated. And we're one of the drivers of getting the underpass rocks or so-called rock garden installed on Imperial Avenue under the Interstate 5 underpass. But now that community is actually seeing more folks on their streets, as one resident spoke with the Union Tribune about.
Yeah, and certainly the harder that places like San Diego make it for the homeless, the more we tend to see them turning up in East County in places like these camps along the riverbeds that we're seeing more and more. And, you know, not only is that a very difficult thing for the homeless, they're out there in the elements and can be preyed upon by all sorts of things,
such as the horrific murder, beating and torture death we just had in Santee of a homeless man.
It also can pose dangers for the communities. I know we've seen, for example, a couple of fires that were started, inadvertently, but by somebody in a homeless camp, for example, with maybe a cigarette or a campfire to keep warm, that kind of thing. Is it short-sighted to not provide shelter services, you know, affordable housing, whatever it may take, to get folks off of the streets instead of just having this sort of NIMBY attitude, this not in my backyard, if we make it hard for them here, they'll just go someplace else?
Absolutely. So every dollar that's spent on whether it's sweeps that are also known as cleanup or property abatement efforts that are done by the cities or the county, that could be invested in actual permanent solutions. And so one of the issues is also that these are dehumanizing effects on the people that are experiencing homelessness, and it creates a culture of living on the street and combative nature between the people experiencing homelessness and the communities themselves, which makes it even harder for folks to get off the street. Many of the folks who are living on the street, as Dolores had talked about earlier, with the demographics of the unsheltered population, many people with mental health issues and substance use disorder issues. And so this just further re-traumatizes people that have had some kind of a traumatizing event in the past, whether it's PTSD or domestic violence. And now these folks are being displaced over and over, or rocks are being put up to keep them out. And it just creates a very bad culture.
Yeah, I've heard one advocate for the homeless describe this as the pest control approach as opposed to a human approach to the problem.
Absolutely. And this is one of the problems that we have with the point in time count. The point in time count is done very, very well in San Diego, and we deploy many volunteers so we get a really good count. But it's a count. It's not actually knowing exactly who the people are and having a by name list of people. And so I know we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but we don't want to dehumanize people. We want to take it the opposite direction.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, too, with this proposal going on the ballot for a new Charger Stadium downtown, if that gets built, do you think we're going to see even more pressure brought to push the homeless out of downtown?
Absolutely. And so all of these efforts, to especially efforts that are going to spend a tremendous amount of taxpayer dollars and resources, they should take a proactive stance on dealing with street homelessness in the areas that are going to be impacted. And the stadium is going to impact an area where we really have a large cluster of homeless services already. And so how is a downtown stadium going to live next to a massive amount of homeless service providers and hundreds of people who are actually living on the street in the same area? This needs to be addressed before we lay the first brick on these projects.
Do you think that the Chargers, if they want that stadium, should be asked to pitch in some money to help solve the homelessness problem in the area, perhaps?
Well, it's certainly a money issue, but it's also an advocacy issue. It's also making sure that the issue is addressed and lending their voice to that. And so this issue takes many different stakeholders to address. The Chargers would just be one of those stakeholders at the table figuring out what to do as we build new projects. So it doesn't matter whether it's the Chargers in downtown or in Mission Valley doing a new stadium, or if we're building some other project in Mission Valley. Solutions to homelessness need to be a part of the conversation first, not at the end like they've always been in the past.
Yeah, it seems ironic that they're willing to ask taxpayers to spend $1 billion or whatever it is to build a stadium and yet not to expend some money to help fellow human beings who are living on the streets.
Yeah, especially when there's a tremendous amount of taxpayer dollars involved.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What are some of the national best practices that could be implemented in San Diego now to end or at least reduce homelessness?
So really it takes going back to that coalition of the willing, that group of stakeholders that controlled the bulk of the resources, getting together and laying a clear foundation for solutions to homelessness. And there's not just one silver bullet to this. There's actually many silver bullets. So we now have interventions that have been proven to work better than anything else, such as rapid rehousing, short-term rental assistance for folks experiencing homelessness, and short-term supportive services to help people get back on their feet, and then take back control of their lives in a housed situation and get back assimilated into the normal community, just like you or I do. And so that program works very well. And I would say that one local provider is really taking advantage of this program. It's Crisis House in El Cajon, who just was awarded a new $415,000 rapid rehousing project.
Good for them. Tell us about that and a little bit about how that program works.
So rapid rehousing is literally, it's a pot of money. And so it works differently than projects have in the past that are based on a brick and mortar project, a temporary housing bed. That's what we've really relied on in the past. And it brings people into our facility normally to receive different types of programs and services. So now a rapid rehousing pot of money can go toward a variety of things that are specifically tailored to that individual or family's needs. So rental assistance, supportive services, maybe a security deposit to get into that unit. And then as soon as the family is able to take over their own payments, then the services back off and we move on to the next individual or family with whatever money that's left. And so, and it's the average cost of providing services under rapid rehousing programs is much cheaper than most emergency shelters and transitional housing programs.
Wow. So that seems like that would make sense from a fiscal responsibility standpoint as well as a humanitarian standpoint.
Absolutely. And that's really why we're moving there, is because we're able to serve far more people with these newer programs. And then we're always going to rely on for long-term folks who've been living on our streets for years, if not decades, with serious issues, sometimes co-occurring issues such as mental health, physical health, and substance use issues. We're going to always rely on permanent supportive housing for those folks. It's long-term rental assistance and long-term supportive services until that person can overcome those issues. So that's really a cornerstone of our system. And that tends to be a fairly expensive intervention. So we want to use it just for those folks who need it the most.
You mentioned creating a by name list of people counted that would identify each person's needs and put that into a database that various organizations could access. Tell us how that would work.
So one of the cornerstones of the communities that are making the most progress across the country is actually having an active by name list of everybody experiencing homelessness in your community. So the point in time count is done very well here in San Diego, and it gives us a one-day count of the people. A by name list gives us an everyday, not just a count, but an everyday list of people experiencing homelessness on our streets. So every time we encounter a new person, they're given a common assessment, no matter where they are in the county. So it brings us together as a region and as a set of providers and service providers who are working on this issue to create a seamless system based on a person's name and needs. So wherever they go in the system, we know who they are and we know what services they've received from other people. So we can provide them the right amount of services based on what their needs are. And if they've already tried something that did not work, we're not going to keep doing the same thing over and over. We all know what the definition of that is.
Yeah. Now, as much as many people have criticized the city of San Diego for some of its actions regarding the homeless, at least it has a shelter for much of the year and a number of programs that are available, maybe not enough. But out here in East County, most of the cities have not only no shelter, many of them really don't have those services, nor does the county, you know, have the kind of system that some other areas have, I understand. Can you give us your assessment of whether or not the County of San Diego, and for that matter, the East County cities, are doing their fair share to help with the homeless issues locally in your view? Or should they be shouldering a greater share of the effort along with the City of San Diego?
So absolutely, everybody needs to get in the sandbox on this. It's going to take all of our cities and certainly the city of San Diego and the county of San Diego working together. And what we find across the city and the county are different levels of housing and services. And it's based on a whole variety of issues. Certainly, the transportation hub, the Greyhound station downtown, a lot of people are coming in there, the trolleys and the transportation, the availability of services drives a lot of people downtown. But also how services are provided around the county can drive people downtown also. So how do shelters operate in different parts of the county is just as important as whether they have shelters. We need to meet people where they're at, and we need to provide shelters and temporary housing and permanent housing solutions based on the people's needs and not our ideology.
Yeah, I should mention, I misspoke a little bit there when I said no place in East County has a shelter. Certainly, the city of El Cajon does spend significant money on providing some services for the homeless. It is through a religious organization. They have some short-term help available for anybody that needs it that's homeless, or most people that need it who are homeless. But to get the long-term care, you have to sort of be willing to accept Jesus and go into the religious program that does not get city funding. So is that one of the gaps that you see? Obviously, we have a growing and diverse population, and not everybody's Christian or wants to be. Should everybody be able to access the same kind of help when they're homeless, regardless of what your religion may be, or even no religion at all?
Well, it really is hard to regulate how people provide services, especially if they're just getting privately funded. But yes, in my opinion, we want to make as many services and housing situations available for people, no matter what their belief system is, or no matter where they're at in their journey to permanent housing. And so that is one of the big issues is, every time a project puts up a barrier, whether it's curfews or blackouts, some programs actually require you to be in a 30-day blackout period where you can't have contact with your friends or family, or you can't go out unattended. These things make it very difficult to overcome homelessness. And so we need to provide services in a very client-centered and customer service oriented way. We need to provide social service and not social control in homeless services. We need to put the client in the center of the picture and provide them with the services and housing that they need to resolve their homelessness.
We've been talking about the cities within San Diego County, but what about the unincorporated areas of the county? What counts and trends are you seeing in our unincorporated communities?
As I mentioned, we will be publishing a comprehensive report that will give profiles for the different cities and specifically for the unincorporated areas as well. We plan to do that in June. But I can tell you that we counted 336 homeless persons in the unincorporated area of the county. And when I look at, say, Lakeside, for example, we counted 87 homeless persons in Lakeside the morning of the count.
I'm looking at your list here, and some of these numbers are pretty staggering.
Spring Valley, 134 unsheltered people. That's an awful lot. A couple of the other numbers that jump out here that are very high, Casa de Oro, 20, and Ramona, 61 unsheltered people. It gets pretty cold up in Ramona. They get snow sometimes.
Yes, it does. And I'd be remiss not to point out something else that the point in time count told us. We saw region-wide a dramatic increase in hand-built structures and tents. Mm. People in that have put up a tent.
Why? We,
69%.
Wow, 69%. The obvious question is why. We've had a homelessness problem for a long time here. Why suddenly are they all building shelters or getting tents?
Yeah, like I said before, the task force can't really address the why. We can only speculate, and I'm going to speculate in this answer. We did have some inclement weather this year. It's El Nino, but I'm going to pitch this one to Michael.
Well, I think that, you know, Dolores, you probably did a pretty good job. I think that because of the potential of inclement weather, there were people were getting tents, putting them up, hand-built structures. Also, I think that the many good citizens of our community that see a tremendous amount of unsheltered folks out on the streets want to help. And as they see it raining and they see these anti-homeless measures to keep people out of areas, they want to reach out to people and do something. And they will often bring people tarps and tents and help construct these structures, in sympathy toward the folks' needs to get them out of the weather.
What do other counties the size of San Diego do to help the homeless that we're not doing here? Are there any that you would consider to be models that maybe the county of San Diego could be looking at? I'll throw that out to both of you who may want to weigh in on this one.
There are, and there are some good things that we're doing here. I think, as Dolores mentioned earlier, one of the really bright spots of the point in time count this year was a 16% reduction in veteran homelessness. That number had actually gone up the previous year. But what we did last year is we deployed an effort as part of the National 25 Cities Initiative to work in a very coordinated fashion with many stakeholders to use our existing and new resources to really target veterans experiencing homelessness. And we proved that it worked. We proved that coming together and rowing together in the same direction in a very systematic approach, we were able to make a huge dent in veteran homelessness.
Very good.
I really think it's critical that the listeners hear that at a very high level, we did see a reduction in homelessness region-wide by less than 1%. Although the news of the unsheltered being up 18.9 is a sobering number, there is some silver lining here. Veteran homelessness did come down by 16%. Family homelessness by 13%. You know, youth homelessness, we were able to take a better count of homeless youth between the ages of 18 and 24 this year. You know, chronic homelessness went down, although we can say that the federal definition was tightened for that. And when you talk to, for example, the Department of Education, they will tell you, County Office of Education, that they served well over 20,000 homeless children during the last school year. But their definition of homelessness is different than the definition that we use for the point in time count. We are talking about those that are literally homeless on the street, living in a tent or a hand-built structure. Yet the school system will count families or children that are overcrowded. So the silver lining on this is veteran homelessness down, chronic homelessness down, family homelessness down. But we do have an increased number in the unsheltered category.
Could I add a little bit more about what we're doing here in San Diego? Because I'd be remiss if I
wouldn't.
We have reached out and we've learned from communities that have made a lot of progress in the last few years, such as Houston, Washington, D.C., New Orleans. And we've developed some really good initiatives here to continue the progress, especially on veteran homelessness. And I want to give credit to the San Diego Housing Commission that developed an excellent landlord development program to bring more landlords into our system to rent to people leaving homelessness, people who have barriers to our normal rental market. And the Housing Commission developed some incentives, and the County Housing and Community Development Department is following suit with a similar program to really make units available to our folks leaving homelessness. And so those are some more of the good things that are going on in San Diego that are also being modeled after communities that have made good progress.
Okay, so it's good to hear that there's some positive news to report on this. Dolores, we've talked a lot about East County and San Diego, but what about North County and the South Bay areas? How are their approach to the homelessness issue different, perhaps, than what we're seeing here?
Well, I can address a little bit about the numbers. You know, of course, the number one position, I'm going to say, that is held regionally is by the city of San Diego for the unsheltered. They held about 58% of the sheltered.
But in a 4,000, was it, square mile county that we have, why is it that if you're homeless, you know, out in the outer regions of the county, you're somehow expected to find your way to a shelter in San Diego?
Well, it's just the way things have worked out over in well over a decade, or, you know, maybe a couple of decades of programs coming online. But I can tell you that the count also showed that the second highest number, which was interesting, was in the city of Oceanside.
Really?
In Oceanside. Now, had we been able to count the 300 plus beds in East County, that number two position would have been in El Cajon. So the third positions were tied, which was Escondido and the city of Chula Vista. North County, as with East County, you know, there isn't a lot of homeless service providers that are providing the services. Interfaith Community Services in North County is probably the one that has the furthest span of area that they serve. There are a few other programs in East County in particular. The staple program is Crisis House. There is a presence by Volunteers of America and by Alpha Project as well.
What about those who have recently been incarcerated? Certainly with the state, we're seeing more release from prisons because of the prison overcrowding situation. Is that contributing to homelessness at all? Are some of these folks having a hard time, you know, getting by?
You know, we asked the question when we surveyed 1,173 homeless persons during the point in time count, about 24% of those that were unsheltered. And we asked several questions, but two primary ones about incarceration. 62% of those that were unsheltered had been in jail or prison or in juvenile hall at one time or other in their lives. Hmm. But 40% of them had been in for less than a month. But 30% of those said they had been released over 5 years ago. But that is different from, are you currently on probation or parole?
Yeah.
And those numbers were significantly less. About 2.2% were on parole and reported they were on parole, and 12.19, you know, said that they were currently on probation. So about 14% of those unsheltered that we interviewed were currently on probation or parole.
So that might be an area to focus on for the future. I'm going to ask each of you, if you could wave your magic wand, somebody made you in charge of the Board of Supervisors tomorrow with enough votes to do what you wanted, what do you think is the most important thing that could be done to help solve the homeless problem in our region, which incidentally a new report shows that the average cost of housing now is something like $1,600 a month for the average rental unit. What would you do to help solve this issue?
Well, my magic wand would be a magic wand that I'd wave over the entire county. Affordable housing is a problem in San Diego in general. What I would do is, it would take more than just the County Board of Supervisors. It would take, you know, everyone, like Michael said, in the sandbox. But I would focus heavily on the creation of permanent supportive housing for the homeless. I'm talking about bricks and mortar, you know, solutions for permanent housing, because we
not
could have
shelters.
Yes, we could have shelters, we could have, you know, rapid rehousing, we could have a number of programs, but at the end of the day, we need to have more bricks and mortar, more places to put people in that are affordable and sustainable, and not just for the homeless, but for the average San Diegan.
Okay, very good.
And I'll add on to what Dolores's base is. It's so important is more affordable housing for folks. But we really need a massive education and advocacy campaign that shows the benefit to all San Diegans, everybody living in San Diego County, about the benefit of solving homelessness and investing in the right solutions. So what I'd really love to see, if I had that magic wand, was I'd want to see the county supervisors prioritize this issue. I'd want to see them prioritize homelessness in all their funding decisions to make sure that we're getting the most impact for our dollars. And we're focusing on people who are very vulnerable and very much in need of help. These are not folks who are subhuman. These are folks who came from our housing as our neighbors. And I would like to see everybody in our community start treating people as such. And I'd like to see some of our cities, including the city of San Diego, devote more general funds to this issue, because those are very flexible dollars and they make our federal funding work so much better. And in conjunction with that, our philanthropy, our county's philanthropic organizations need to also get together and learn about the best practices for this issue and make sure they're aligning funding with all the cities, with the county, with the businesses, with the certainly with the people on the ground doing the very, very difficult work. All of our great service providers across the county, 46 of them are contributing data to our system. It is a large system, and we need to get everybody rowing in somewhat of the same direction, and we can make an incredible dent, if not resolve this issue.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much for sharing that information. My final question would be for listeners out there who want to actually do something to help the homeless. What advice would you give them? How can they help? Where can they get involved?
Well, I'd like to take this opportunity to encourage listeners that when they have a dollar to give, there are many, many organizations region-wide that help the homeless, not just take them off the street, but to put them in permanent housing. And I would suggest that rather than to give that dollar to a homeless person that might be, you know, standing, you know, at a freeway entrance or on a street, that they give that dollar to an organization. I'd also encourage them to go on our website, www.rtfhsd.org, and take a look at the information.
That abbreviation stands for
Regional Task Force Homeless San Diego.org, rtfhsd.org.
Very good. And Michael, what about you? What advice would you have for our listeners?
Most importantly, to learn about the issue, learn about the people that are going through this situation. Homelessness is a horrific situation. People do not want to be homeless. They want to be housed. Nobody wants to sleep on the concrete. Learn more about the issue. Make sure whatever you're doing, and it doesn't matter whether you're giving money or giving your time, make sure that it's having the impact that you want it to have. A couple of our really important events that happen every year, and I want to say thanks to Dolores at the Regional Task Force on the Homeless, not just for being out in the community and educating people about the data and the numbers on homelessness, but also running the point in time count. We can always use more volunteers. It's a myth that more homelessness leads to more money, but we want to make sure that we're counting everybody who is homeless. We actually get more opportunities for funding as we're doing a better job with the money we're getting. And then just learn about the issue and get involved.
Okay. Well, I really want to thank you both for joining us. Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Dolores Diaz, the Executive Director of the Regional Task Force on the Homeless in San Diego, and Michael McConnell, who runs the Homelessness News Advocacy site and has been a longtime advocate for solving homelessness in our region. Thanks to both of you for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Our pleasure.
Thank you very much.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Brian Boykel, Kevin McLeod,
We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment.
If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.